music while maintaining the sensibilities and attitudes that come from growing up on a healthy diet of punk rock. The leader of the band is the Sam Chase himself, a natural storyteller with a voice that sounds as if it has weathered many an epic tale. With boot-stomping orchestration and lyrics that have been immortalized on the tattooed skin of their fans, the Sam Chase and the Untraditional don't mess around. These are the warriors we need in these troubled times. Get tickets at Chico Paper Company, online at kzfr.org, Blazing Jays, and at the door. Low Flying Birds open the show at 8 o'clock.
And Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Ohm Foods, serving organic, non-GMO, whole foods, including wild-caught mahi-mahi, and having the largest vegan menu in downtown Chico. Ohm Foods serves homemade teas and lemonade, acai bowls, and smoothies blended with coconut water, and they're located at 142 Broadway, just two blocks from Chico State. They're open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Saturday from 11 to 3 with to-go and catering available. For more info, find them at iloveohmfoods.com and on Facebook. And we're supported by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to show 1928, the July 10th, 2019 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal news, animal rights, and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and streaming online at kzfr.org.
On today's show, we'll be sharing some local news for a change, including an article in the Chico ER on vegan dining in Chico, with an exclamation point. A recent article from the Chico News and Review on the campfire cats, and we'll end with two pieces on commercial whaling by Japan, which resumed this month. And we do have a sister city in Japan, so it's still related to Chico.
Very good. I like that connection.
All right. There you go, Jeannie.
Thanks a lot. Before we get into today's news, I wanted to give you an update on the Farallon Island story that we talked about last week. I'm very happy to report that WildCare, the Marin County-based wildlife advocacy group, today announced that its experts helped convince the California Coastal Commission to look more closely at plans to eradicate house mice from the Farallon Islands through their preferred method of controlling house mice on the Farallons was to dump about over a ton of rat poison.
The power of public radio made this happen.
You know, the power of some amazing advocates and persistence for doing what's right. WildCare and other opponents raised enough questions and concerns that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made the decision to withdraw their request. The battle isn't over, but this was definitely a win for that group. All right, and I also have an update on AB 1788, again about these rodenticides. AB 1788 is the California Ecosystems Protection Act, which has been moved into the final stretch with a due pass action from the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee today, July 10th. AB 1788 would ban the use of second-generation anticoagulant rodenticides throughout the state of California, with certain exceptions, and would also ban the use of first-generation anticoagulant rodenticides on state-owned lands. The high toxicity and persistence of these rat poisons that we talked about in the last, two or three issues is responsible for the poisoning and contamination and death of mountain lions, bobcats, and hawks, other apex predators, and other wildlife that prey on poison rats and animals that have consumed those rats. So those are two pieces of good news I did not expect to be sharing. I did not think that the Fish and Wildlife Service would withdraw that proposal. So that was good news to hear. So now on to our first news piece, which is a local one as promised. I had the pleasure myself of being interviewed by the Chico Enterprise Record a few weeks ago in preparation for that newspaper's new column that will be covering veganism in Chico. The article was published on July 3rd and was written by Natalie Hansen, and she was a pleasure to speak to. Here's how her article runs. And the reason why I'm giving this coverage is because I am shocked that the Chico ER is covering veganism.
I think maybe we can thank the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger, right?
So many local restaurants are carrying those now. A decade ago, eating vegan in Chico was extremely difficult, like in many semi-rural suburban towns across the nation. Things are changing at last. While Chico remains largely dependent on the agriculture and meat and dairy industries, a shift is definitely taking place in food culture, as well as around the nation, towards veganism. A whole world of options has exploded. As national chains expand their offerings of meat and dairy alternatives in response to overwhelming demand, local businesses are increasingly inclined to work with changing dietary requests, as well as concerns for the environment and treatment of animals. Even in a rural area, it does help to live in California. We're privileged when it comes to the availability of seasonal fruits and vegetables, as well as expanding selections of vegan meat and cheese alternatives. Although Chico doesn't have the helpful grocery chains like Whole Foods and Sprouts, efforts by chains like Trader Joe's, New Earth Market, and Grocery Outlet show a response to the growing demand for Chico for vegan-friendly products. But is there an abundance of vegan options in this town? As a 95% vegan trying to stay committed to this town for years, I feel it isn't an easy switch to make if you've lived here as a carnivore for a while. But there are plenty of reasons to try, and I believe the community has made it easier than ever before to live a vegan life. First, here are a few statistics about veganism in 2019. And here she lists off a couple of, I think she did a great job of listing the highlights, the important statistics. One, the dairy industry is rapidly losing ground to plant-based milk alternatives. As Americans drank 149 pounds of dairy milk per capita in 2017, down from 247 pounds in 1975.
That's a big difference.
According to the USDA.
And that's, I guess, discounting for our population growth since then, too.
Right. Americans increasingly swap out cow's milk for new beverages using almonds, oats, and other bases. Beyond Meat and Impossible Burger are locked in a fierce battle for dominance with the alternative meat industry, now being a $140 billion industry, as more chains offer alternative meat menu choices. The next statistic, while the numbers of people reporting themselves as vegan or vegetarian remain around 5% of the total population, sales of plant-based food grew 8.1% in 2017, according to Gallup polls. There's a stronger sense of community in the area these days for those looking to transition into and stick with veganism. More and more businesses are beginning to produce veg-friendly and vegan products and meals to answer rising demands, in part driven by our town's college-age population and foodie culture. Our farmers' markets are essential to meeting other vegans and finding plant-friendly options. And you can also start online. The Chico Vegan Meetup Facebook group is one of the most welcoming in the area. I was so pleased at that. We work hard to create a welcoming social media place.
You sure do.
The guide to vegan-friendly restaurants at ChicoVegan.com website in Chico is comprehensive and an essential when looking for veg-friendly meals in addition to the Happy Cow app. And, Natalie Hansen's article went on to mention a few vegan-friendly Chico restaurants and cafes and concluded with the helpful advice, whatever you can manage now, start a plant-based eating journey in Chico, and you may find that there's more ways to enjoy delicious, fresh food made right here in the valley than you ever expected. So that was just a great column by local reporter Natalie Hansen in last week's Chico Enterprise Record. Her next column, it's planning to be, I think, every 2 weeks right now. Her next column is scheduled to appear next Wednesday on July 17th. So if you read nothing else from the ER, I highly recommend Natalie's column. She's also a Chico State grad. She was cool. A reporter for the Orion. So I just think that's great to see the Chico ER covering this kind of, culture and lifestyle.
I'm sure a lot of people read her article that probably don't find our Facebook groups because they might not be on the Facebook or the internet, you know?
Oh, yeah. Print media is not dead. Radio is not dead either. So, you've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. Over to you, Danny.
All right, I'm only mostly dead, so let me continue here. In case you missed it, the cover story of the Chico News and Review last Wednesday featured the feline survivors of the campfire. Jellybean the cat has been on his own in Magalia since the campfire, but on June 9th, the elusive long-haired tabby was finally trapped by Friends United in Rescue volunteers and reunited with his human, Julie Walker, the next day. Jellybean had spent more than 7 months in the wild. Wow. It's a testament to a cat's ability to survive and also a reminder to not give up hope. Even though most animal rescue efforts have ceased, there are certain sturdy yet skittish pets, like cats, still being found in the burn scar and owners who might not know that a reunion is still possible. But time is running out. On June 30th, the Fieldhaven Feline Rescue's Paradise Transfer Station, one of the primary shelters for the campfire rescues, closed its doors at the same time that the Campfire Pet Rescue and Reunification Organization, which shared that space, ceased its trapping operations. Because you have to both find and trap these animals, and then you have to house them and rehome them. So it's a lot of people involved. However, there are still other groups working to bring cats in, namely the grassroots Friends United in Rescue, otherwise known as FUR. That's quite clever. Previously, Friends of Campfire Cats in Paradise and Fire Cat Farm in Butte Valley, as well as a slew of citizen-led Facebook pages. The cats from Fieldhaven will be transferred to foster homes, as well as the organization's feline center in Lincoln. As of last week, there were more than 100 unclaimed campfire cats being taken care of by those three groups. Even though Campfire Pet Rescue and Reunification is no longer trapping, its reunification efforts continue, largely via the organization's impressive database of found pets, which includes animals picked up by trapping shelter groups, as well as the other Butte County shelters, animal control, and even private citizens posting to Craigslist, Facebook, etc.
It's really a remarkable enterprise. We've had Jennifer Petrusco, she'll be mentioned mm-hmm. later, from Campfire Pet Rescue and Reunification. That's one of the things they get up and running first is this giant spreadsheet of all the lost animals, and then as they mentioned earlier in this piece, there's a lot of citizen-led Facebook groups that start up, so there's a lot of separate little areas, and so volunteers just learn to look for people posting found cat, lost cat information on all these different streams and combining them on these spreadsheets.
Yeah, it seems like a well-functioning sort of logistical network to make all that come together.
All volunteers.
Yeah. As of last week, 1,420 rescued cats had been listed in the database since the fire broke out, plus 477 dogs and 175 other animals, horses, chickens, sheep, etc. Campfire Pet Rescue and Reunification was co-founded by Jennifer Petruska, the aforementioned, who lived in an RV outside the Paradise Transfer Station between late February and the end of June. She has been in Butte County and away from her Santa Rosa home since November 10th. Pet Rescue and Reunification, the parent group, was started by Petruska and others in the wake of the 2015 Valley Fire in Lake County, and since then has brought its organizational structure to fires in Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino, Redding, and now Butte County, working with local organizations to centralize pet rescue efforts as much as possible. You know, this reminds me of the World Kitchen and some of the other groups that go around to these disasters because that sort of logistical experience, that supply chain experience, just that people experience and training, it's so valuable. You know, into some disaster area where people are just initially trying to survive And you can come in and set that up if you're, you know, a good-hearted person like this who knows how to do it. So it's kind of sad that we're getting to the point where we have these experienced disaster groups.
I know. It's sad to hear all the counties and fires listed like that.
There's so many people doing great work. If you haven't had a chance yet, please take a look at the pictures on the CNR website, ChicoNewsAndReviews.com, which is what started this article here. And perhaps you will see that it's not too late to check to see if your pet survived the fire and were rescued. If you see your cat in one of these pictures, contact Field Haven or Fur right away. If you don't see your missing cat here, visit the Campfire Pet Rescue and Reunification and other trapping shelter sites and scroll through the photos. Your cat might be waiting for you to come looking. And so that was an article by Jason Cassidy and Sue Anderson titled Nine Lives in Paradise from the July 3rd issue of the Chico News and Review.
Yeah, and, you know, we had the news clip before the 5 o'clock show talking about how to prepare your HVAC system for fires. I'm going to share a few tips that the News and Review published to prepare your pets for fires and other emergencies that might have coming up. I thought they were just very sensible things. Number one, tag them. Microchip your pet and make sure that they wear a collar with ID tag that has your cell phone number. And they mentioned that as a tip, add your pet as a contact in your phone with their microchip number as their phone number. So that way you'll be able to have that ready at hand. I don't have to log into the microchip database. Number two, take a picture. Take note of your pet's unique markings and keep a few pet photos in your phone.
That won't be hard for some of us.
I know, right, cats? Pack a go bag. Fill a pet crate with extra leash, harnesses, bowls, food, a jug of water, cat litter, and pet carriers for if you have smaller animals, and keep that in an accessible spot and ready to go.
I'm going
to
jump in again. Like with cats, you can often end up with maybe more than two or three cats if you like cats. And it's really imperative to have at least kind of the folding cardboard cat carriers.
Oh, yeah.
Not just for disasters, but, you know, I sort of cringe inside every time I'm at the vet and somebody comes in holding a wriggling cat in their arms and the cat's about to bolt and mayhem's about to break loose and you're just like, it's like $5-$10, I don't know, get a box, get something.
And number four, don't wait. Bring your pets with you as soon as an evacuation is ordered. Place cats in their carriers early before they get freaked out and bolt. You might not be able to return for them. And that those are just helpful tips from the News and Review article from last week. All right, Danny. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. What is our next story? Let's go ahead and
Reuters News Service reports that Japan officially resumed commercial whaling at the beginning of July after more than 30 years of limiting whale hunts to, quote, scientific purposes, a policy that still resulted in the deaths of hundreds of whales every year, because apparently Japanese scientists are really bad. Reuters.com reported, sorry, Japanese scientists, but you get my sarcasm. In December of 2018, Japan announced that it would withdraw from the International Whaling Commission, IWC, moratorium on whale hunting, which began in 1985 to give endangered and overhunted whale species a chance to rebound. Japan joined the compact in 1988, agreeing to only hunt whales for scientific purposes, such as collecting population data. I guess subtracting one each time they did this. However, according to Reuters, the gesture did little to curb commercial whaling in Japan. From 1985 to 2017, Japanese vessels caught and killed nearly 17,000 whales, whose meat often ended up for sale in stores and restaurants after the so-called research had concluded. Japan joins Iceland and Norway as the only nations to allow commercial whaling despite the IWC moratorium. Hunting will reportedly be limited to Japan's territorial sea and exclusive economic zone, which stretches about 200 nautical miles from the nation's coasts, Reuters reported, and the nation will cease whaling in Antarctic waters. Whales living near Japan include, is it mink?
Minky. Minky.
It's minky, I thought. That's why I checked. Minky and brides, hopefully it's brides and not brideys, whales, which are a species of least concern of extinction, as well as whales, which are listed as endangered. The Japanese Fisheries Agency set a hunting quota of 227 whales for 2019. This is conservative compared to previous hunting activities. In summer of 2017, for example, Japanese whaling vessels killed 333 minke whales in Antarctica alone, 122 of which were pregnant, all under the guise of, quote, science.
You just have to wonder what's going on there, right?
I mean, I kind of know.
How do they set their own quotas, and how those quotas become less than what they were doing when they were hunting for scientific purposes?
Things I've read over the recent years, too, is that very few people in Japan want to eat whale meat.
Oh, that's true.
They literally are kind of going out of their way to try to put this into, you know, pet, I don't know if it's pet foods or school lunches or the usual places you'd get rid of meat nobody wants, because this is really driven by, you know, rural conservatism, nationalism.
We've always done it this way.
We've always done it, and these other people are saying we can't do it, therefore we're going to do more of it, because that'll get us votes for our particular brand of politics. The cost of thousands of whale, you know, 17,000 whale lives over since 85, anyway.
So although I was, like, really, I was saddened to hear that Japan is resuming commercial whaling and pulling out of the International Whaling Commission, this other piece that came up I thought was really interesting. Our friends over at Sea Shepherd feel otherwise about this action. And I found a statement that was released by Sea Shepherd founder Captain Paul Watson back in December 2018 when Japan first announced its intent to withdraw from the International Whaling Commission. Captain Paul Watson wrote, Sea Shepherd is pleased to see that Japan is considering withdrawing from the IWC and will openly hunt whales commercially. Commercial whaling is absolutely forbidden in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, and commercial whaling anywhere is illegal. This means that the IWC can now pass its resolution to create the South Atlantic Whale Sanctuary. This means that Japan is now openly declaring their illegal whaling activities, no more pretense of research whaling. With this announcement, Japan has declared themselves as a pirate whaling nation. This will make Sea Shepherd's objective of shutting down these poachers much easier. So I thought that was like, whoa.
That's interesting.
Okay,
yeah.
Right? Watson goes on to say that this is a positive development for several reasons. Number one, because Japan has never stopped commercial whaling. They have hidden it behind the excuse of so-called scientific whaling since 1987. They have continued commercial whaling despite the International Court of Justice ruling that there is no legal justification for their so-called scientific whaling. Now there can be no facade. Japan has joined Norway and Iceland in their open defiance of international conservation law. All three nations are pirate whaling nations, which is so interesting to me because Sea Shepherd is the group that bears the skull and crossbones banner, and you know, they're the ones who go into these lawless maritime areas and try to save these threatened animals. Point number two. With Japan out of the International Whaling Commission, the IWC can now pass the South Atlantic Whale Sanctuary. The IWC can now focus on conservation instead of whaling. Japan has been the single greatest detriment to the IWC during its entire history. Number three, the Japanese puppet nations will no longer be obligated to vote against conservation, and without Japanese bribes, many will simply quit the IWC. For instance, Mongolia is a member of the IWC, and that country has absolutely no connection to whaling historically or practically, and yet is a member of the IWC. Number four, the IWC can now vote to condemn industrial commercial whaling. Number five, Japan will not be able to kill whales in the Southern Ocean. It is an internationally established whale sanctuary, and the only reason Japan has been able to flaunt the law is by invoking the excuse of scientific research whaling. Overt commercial whaling is strictly prohibited in the Southern Ocean, and Japan has indicated it will quit the Southern Ocean while expanding whaling in the North Pacific. This would mean that the current whaling season in Antarctic waters will be the last. And if you missed it, this is Captain Paul Watson's response to the resumption of commercial whaling by Japan. Point number six, Japan will be able to withdraw from the Southern Ocean without losing face. That's important. That's an important thing.
Yeah, I'm actually wondering, you know, if I don't think we know or could even find out the funding of these things for Japan, but they possibly could have been getting funding for this from some sort of scientific budget. Maybe they won't now, and maybe they will have to be profitable, and maybe they won't be.
That's true. Number seven, opposition to illegal Japanese commercial whaling will be easier. Basically, we will be dealing with poachers. Japan will no longer be able to pretend that their commercial whaling is research whaling. Number eight, Sea Shepherd's objective to end whaling in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary will have been met. And Paul Watson goes on to say, the last time Sea Shepherd engaged with the Japanese whaling fleet in the Southern Ocean was for the 2016-2017 whaling season. We sent the Ocean Warrior and the Steve Irwin. Japan countered with a multi-million-dollar military-grade surveillance, making it impossible for Sea Shepherd to close in on their operations. Sea Shepherd has been unable to compete with such a massive security investment on the part of Japan. On the positive side, Japan has been forced to expend a great deal of money on security each year to maintain this edge. Sea Shepherd's relentless opposition to Japanese whaling in the Southern Ocean since 2002 has been a major factor in undermining Japanese whaling activities. It has cost the whalers and the Japanese government tens of millions of dollars and saved the lives of over 6,000 whales. A whaling-free Southern Ocean has been Sea Shepherd's objective for two decades, and if Japan moves forward with their threat to withdraw from the IWC and to resume overt commercial whaling, this objective will be realized. And that was Captain Paul Watson predicting his group's response to the ending of commercial so-called research whaling in the southern Antarctic.
And possibly they'll have more resources free to chase them around in the Arctic now that they're not down south.
Yeah, those whales, I try to limit how much depressing news I cover, but man, there's some decimation going on with right whales up in Pacific and Atlantic waters. All right, well, you've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM.
Now it's time for the Chico Vegan and Animal Rights Calendar Events. Get out your calendars. What do you have, Jeannie?
All right, I'm going to keep it pretty short. The Chico Peace and Justice Center is looking for volunteers to join its money committee. This committee helps the Peace and Justice Center by planning fundraisers, thanking donors, and more. For more information, call 893-9078 or go to chicopeace.org. And coming up on July 20th, Boogie Fever in the Foothills. It will be a 70s disco costume party being held on Saturday, July 20th, 2019, from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at the Foothills Event Center in Grass Valley. This all-vegan event will feature a photo booth, fog machine, dance lights, and hula hoops. All proceeds from this event will benefit Grass Valley's nonprofit Center for Animal Protection and Education, CAPE, and their animal rescue programs. For tickets and more information, go to capeanimals.org. All right, and then just a heads up, on September 16th, there will be a special screening of The Game Changers. The Game Changers is a new film executive produced by James Cameron of Titanic fame, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Jackie Chan. The film documents the explosive rise of plant-based eating in professional sports, mixing real-time groundbreaking science with cinematic stories of struggle and triumph. And for that, tickets will be available online at fathomevents.com, and that is September 6th at 7:30 p.m. And, as always, that is it for the calendar. If you have an event to share, please send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. And we have one last piece of business to close out today's show, and that is the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
Congratulations to the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team for their World Cup Championship.
Woohoo!
Yes, Captain Megan Rapinoe, a Reading native, I believe, was amazing, as much for her soccer skills as for her spirit, and we at Non-Human Radio salute her. Today's Animal Rights Quote of the Week is the U.S. Women's Team's co-captain and proud vegan, Alex Morgan, who said, quote, I adopted a vegan diet because it didn't feel fair to have a dog I adore and yet eat meat at the same time. Show notes and links to the articles mentioned in today's show will be posted to the Non-Human Radio Facebook page and on Instagram at Chico Vegan.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, its underwriters, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow Earthlings who would rather not be killed and hunted, farmed, raced, experimented upon, conducted, subjected to scientific research by Japan, yes, and otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. Please stay tuned for KZFR's weekly public affairs program, The Real Issue, coming up next from 6 to 7 p.m.
This is Danny Thompson, Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.